This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT in Houston. And now, Houston's only primetime radio program dedicated to news and concerns of the lesbi, gay, and transgender identity. This is Queer Voices.
Good evening, this is Jack Felice.
And Jennifer Renee.
And Glenn Holt.
Brian Levinka.
And Jack, what's on tonight?
Tonight, we're going to open up with David Elliott. He's going to sort of give us an up-to-date on where we stand on gay marriage across the country, as so much has been happening in recent weeks. And then we're going to have Paul Scott on from Austin, who is representing Equality Texas. He's the executive director, and Paul's going to be giving us an update now that the legislature is finished doing their damage.
For the time being.
For the time being. But the good news is there was no anti-gay, anti-GLBT stuff even up.
Yeah.
So there was some work on hoping to progress some stuff, and we'll find out where we are there. And then we are going to be talking in the second hour with the Houston Pride Band. And they're going to be doing a concert for Pride, as you know what? It's Pride
Month. It's Pride Month, everybody.
And this is the 40th anniversary of Stonewall this year.
That, oh, my God, that is.
Yes.
Isn't it?
Yes. So, Jennifer, you and I are both over 40.
Yes.
Barely.
We remember our parents telling us about Stonewall.
Well, and, you know, it was the same year as Woodstock, and I knew all about Woodstock, but I didn't know anything about Stonewall at the time.
Well, everybody says that, you know, if you remember the 60s, you really weren't there.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And then we're going to be playing This Way Out segment that we missed during the fundraising time, so we'll be catching up with that. And, of course, news wrap and all the other stuff from This Way Out. So that's what we got on the show this week.
It's great. Hang in there, guys. We're going to get started.
Do we have any announcements? Brian, you have something, don't you?
We have a program coming on this Wednesday night on Channel 8. It's called Montrose, The Transformation of a Neighborhood. And I got to see a preview of it last week, and it's very interesting how Montrose has changed. That will be Wednesday at 8 p.m. on Channel 8. Please tune in and see this wonderful show.
Okay. And we should have on the line with us now David Elliott from Washington.
David, are you there?
I am here. How are y'all doing?
Just fine. And just before we get started, I don't know if you saw this clip that I forget where I saw it, but it was Ann Coulter and the gentleman who is supposed to be the senator from Minnesota, Al Franken. And they were on this panel, and they basically says, who would you like to be in history so you could possibly change things? And Ann Coulter said she'd like to be FDR so she wouldn't do the New Deal. And then Al Franken says, I'd like to be Hitler so we wouldn't have the Holocaust and World War II. And I just thought, wow, isn't that incredible?
Wow. Well, that is so that is very incredible, especially because, you know, the group I'm working for right now is basically fighting to do the next New Deal.
Yes, and
tell
that's
us about that.
Yes, that's and I know you want to talk about gay marriage, but why don't you give us a little synopsis of what? Because I find this really interesting, and I'm sure all the stuff that you're doing is really good stuff.
Well, you know, Jack, I found myself having a really interesting day today. I was in this thing called a green room, which, you know what a green room is, but
yes,
lot of the listeners might not.
In at KPFT, it's purple.
Yeah. Oh, good. Great. That's fantastic. Actually, the one I was in today was white. There wasn't anything green about it. It was like it was very sterile and ugly. But I was back there with the former Vermont Governor Howard Dean, and I was there with the U.S. Secretary of Labor, Solis. I can't remember her first name. I should have looked that up. A Latino woman, former congresswoman from California.
Okay.
And you know, everybody was about to go out and talk to a really receptive audience of like 300, 400, 500 people about healthcare. And it was really, really exciting. And it told me, it spoke to me about how dramatically things have changed. You know, 4 years ago, we were trying to defeat former President Bush's efforts to privatize Social Security.
Yes.
And now we're talking about getting quality, affordable health care for all passed this year.
That's
a radical transformation.
Right, and that's really interesting. And in our next segment, we're going to be talking to Paul Scott of Equality Texas, where here in Texas, where they are trying to expand the CHIP program, which is the Children's Health Insurance Program for people who are in the mid to lower pay scale who cannot afford it or cannot get it from work, and that was defeated.
Right. Yeah. Right, and yeah, and even after we passed funding, you know, in Congress to support it, and the Texas legislature defeated it. But this could be a conversation for another time,
yes,
or for later in the program. Jack, I want to talk to you a little bit about same-sex marriage.
Okay.
Because last week...
You mean marriage equality.
Marriage equality. Thank you. Thank you for correcting
me on that. Just want to get it clarified there.
Yeah. Last week, we were all disappointed, although not surprised, when the California Supreme Court upheld the ban on marriage equality, the ban on same-sex marriage that had been passed by California voters very narrowly. But there is good news.
I would love to hear that.
Well, you know, we have 5 states now that have approved marriage equality. Massachusetts, Connecticut, Maine, Vermont, Iowa. And we have 3 other states that are on the verge of passing marriage equality. New Hampshire, New York, New Jersey. And we look at it nationwide, and you wonder, aside from Iowa, is marriage equality becoming a regional phenomenon? Well, maybe yes and maybe no. You know, you do have about 30 states across the country that have approved constitutional amendments to ban marriage equality, you know, particularly in the South, particularly in the Mountain West, and the Plain States, with the exception, perhaps, of New Mexico. And in the Midwest, I almost said the New West, but that's interesting in and of itself. In the Midwest, things are looking a little bit better. Marriage equality might be passed in the next few years in Illinois and Minnesota. And on the West Coast, there's a chance that marriage equality might be passed in Washington. And I want to quote Evan Wolfson, a, you know, visionary person who's a leader in this movement. He works for the group Freedom to Marry. He says, quote, "The classic pattern of civil rights advance in the United States is patchwork. The gay civil rights movement is going to follow the classic pattern." And even folks on the other side of the fence, so to speak, agree, ironically, with Evan Wolfson. Here we have Kerry Gordon Earl, I can't pronounce her name, I'm sorry. She works for Focus on the Family, a religious right group. She says, "A majority of states are locked in now. I think this is the way the map is going to be for a while." And she adds that they're going to be working on, you know, states that, not in the Northeast where, you know, we've been winning victories, but other states in other parts of the country. And, you know, we have a lot of states that are really, really in play. I mentioned before New Hampshire and New Jersey. New York is very, very close. Here in Washington, D.C., it looks like an anti-gay marriage group is going to be working very, very hard to put a ballot measure on our ballot to try to ban same-sex marriage, marriage equality. And I want y'all to know, if they put it on the ballot here, we're going to beat it.
Well, you know, the interesting thing about Washington is the only person that voted against the current we'll accept it from other places was Marion Barry, who used to be on the Pacifica board.
Well, and in fact, when he, Jack, that's an excellent point. When he was first elected mayor of Washington, D.C. years and years and years ago, he only won because he reached out and received gay and lesbian support.
Wow.
Back then, we didn't talk about bisexuals. We didn't talk about the transgender community. I mean, this was like in, gosh, I want to say the late 1970s. Now, he's a city council member. He represents Ward 8. He represents a ward where there's religious opposition to marriage equality. And so you see how politicians can change.
Yes.
And you see how Marion Barry is no longer a friend of ours.
Interesting.
Yeah, so to continue a minute, I want to quote Ray Carey, executive director of the National Gay and Lesbian Task Force, who says when it comes to marriage equality, quote, "I do think the momentum will continue. I have no doubt that over time, more states will join in marriage equality. There are simply more and more people across the country who know same-sex marriage couples, excuse me, who know same-sex couples who are married. Their kids go to school together, and their life continues on." She went on to say that others, she and other allies said, having a handful of states allowing same-sex marriage creates a critical mass that the rest of the country cannot ignore. If only, and this is a really interesting point, if only because of the complex legal issues that are already being raised. For example, a company in Iowa, which has adopted marriage equality, may want to transfer a gay couple to another state where their marriage would not be recognized.
Right.
So do you, like, recognize that couple's benefits or not? I mean, you could see the myriad of legal entanglements that this could create.
Well, then the lawsuits that might come from it if they didn't.
Exactly, which is an interesting point, Jack, in and of itself.
That was Jennifer.
Jennifer, I'm sorry. I keep doing that.
It's okay. I forgive you.
I know. Her voice is deeper than mine.
Give me a break.
I actually think that Jennifer's voice and Jack's voice are kind of similar. Aww. Am I wrong there? Anyway, but no, it raises a really interesting question, because eventually this whole issue is headed for the U.S. Supreme Court.
Yeah, there's no other way. Eventually, it's got to get there. There'll be too much.
Well,
a critical mass of lawsuits,
especially in California, where there's a certain class that got married during that, you know, 5-month period that are married, and now you can't get married.
19,000 couples, Jack. 19,000 couples were married in California between the time that marriage equality was allowed and between the time that the California Supreme Court struck it down.
And I just can't wait till Robin Tyler addresses the Supreme Court to tell them.
Well, you know, we want that to happen, but the question is, when do we want it
exactly
to happen? Because if it happens before one of the, I call it the 4+5, the 4 conservative justices on the Supreme Court, plus Justice Kennedy, who we have reason to believe is sympathetic toward LGBT issues. Pregnant pause here.
Yes.
Reason to believe is sympathetic toward LGBT issues. If it happens before one of those 4+5 is replaced, then we could get a catastrophic ruling against the community.
Don't want to have that. But there's a lot of things that are on the books now that make it to some of the appeals courts that never do make it to the Supreme Court.
Well, sure, across the country. I mean, you know, the Supreme Court accepts, what, maybe 1% of the cases that gets to it. The Supreme Court accepts, what is it, 100 cases a year or something like that. So, yeah, it's going to be a long, tough slog. But the really important point needs to be made. And, you know, Carrie LaBelle, longtime executive director of the National Lesbian Gay Task Force, made this point years and years ago. Equality begins at home. Equality begins at the city council level, the county commissioner's
sure,
level.
Sure, absolutely. And that's where, you know, we've done a lot of that work in the beginning, but we do need to have a national policy.
Sure. Absolutely. But, you know, Jack, that brings me to a point that you made on email recently, a very key and intelligent point. What's happening these days in Congress with the Employment Non-Discrimination Act? What's happening with Don't Ask, Don't Tell? What's happening with hate crimes legislation?
Well, tell us.
Well, and you know, that's an interesting point that you bring up, because Jennifer and I were at a table last year when both the Obama campaign and the Hillary Clinton campaign were trying to get the endorsement of the GLBT political caucus here in Houston, and there were a lot of things said about the progress that was going to be made towards civil rights for GLBT people.
Well, exactly. And those three things, which are, I would argue, the three most high-profile things on people's you know, radar screen right now, Don't Ask, Don't Tell, Employment Non-Discrimination Act, and hate crimes legislation, guess what? They are probably not going to move until next year. Now, it's not because of any insipid anti-LGBT animus on the part of the Obama administration or the Democratic-led Congress. It's because Congress can only handle a few big things at one time. Right now we've got health care, we've got cap-and-trade legislation, we're about to have a huge fight over financial regulation so that we can prevent what happened last September from ever happening again. You know, our banks all collapsed.
And I understand all that, but we also got to recognize that there are some incredibly talented people in the military that are being forced out. That's costing this country a lot of money and talent to in the jobs that they were doing.
Well, it's, Jack, that's an excellent, excellent point. I mean, the CIA, with no hint of irony, came out with a report just the other day pointing out that they have an incredible shortage of translators. And we have known all along that a whole lot of gay and lesbian people were kicked out of the military who were translators.
Yes.
Because, well,
and
you know,
still are.
Yeah.
Yes. And another thing I want to bring up about discrimination, ExxonMobil continues to have the dubious distinction of being the only Fortune 50 company that refuses to add sexual orientation and gender identity to non-discrimination policy.
Yes.
Well, you know, Jack, I would urge a boycott of ExxonMobil, but your listeners are in Houston. I don't know how pragmatic that is.
Well, I'm sure there's a lot of Pacifica listeners in this area that don't like some of the practices of ExxonMobil going way back.
Well, and the thing is that it's each individual just choosing, making that choice when they want to get gasoline or repairs or whatever. They just don't go. And I understand that one of the reasons why ExxonMobil is looking at selling their retail establishments is because of the fact that they just don't want to have to mess with it anymore.
Boy, well, you know, Jennifer, given all the bad press they've gotten, I wouldn't want to have to mess with it myself.
It's the only directly where the public can vote is with their dollar against ExxonMobil is by don't buying their gasoline or their oil.
True.
That's the only location they can do it. So if you want to make a protest against ExxonMobil, you just don't buy their gasoline or oil. And why would they want to do that? They're the biggest corporation in the world.
Yeah. And they posted among the world's largest profits last year. My golly. Y'all remember last summer when, you know, gasoline was going over $4 a gallon? Oh, my.
What else do you hear on the Hill about any of the other legislation coming up? Healthcare. What's going on with that?
Oh, my God, Jennifer. We are in an exciting sprint, and I get to be a little part of it. Senator Kennedy has introduced a plan that will provide healthcare coverage for everybody. So if either you are among the estimated 46 million to 50 million people who are currently uninsured, you would get coverage, no cost out of pocket at all. If you're part of folks who are underinsured, or you don't like your private plan, you would have an option. We're looking at this. It's going to be sprinting through committee over the next 2 months. We're not sure if it's going to be passed by August 7th, which is when Congress takes its recess. I kind of doubt it will be. I think it's going to go into September or even October. But this is a debate that we've been having for 100 years in this country.
Really?
100 years. And it seriously looks like this year, 2009, for the first time in history, we actually are going to have a plan that is going to offer people the option of quality, affordable health care for all.
That would be very remarkable, because I am one of those people that can't... most insurance companies, there are a few, I believe, but most of them won't insure trans people.
Well, Jennifer, under this plan, you're going to get insurance. Now, that's the good news. I have to tell you the bad news.
Okay, what's the bad news?
We're passing it this year. It's probably not going to go into existence because all of the rigmarole, all of the, guidelines that have to be written, it's probably not going to actually exist until 2011.
So I have to stay healthy till then, huh?
That's how things work in this country,
Well, I've had to do the same thing for the last 12 years, so what's another couple of years? All right, well, that's the health care. What else is going on that we don't know about? Give us some inside stuff.
The inside stuff. We're going to be passing cap and trade legislation, a lot of clean energy jobs. We're going to be massively increasing. If there are parents out there, parents who have kids who are getting ready to go to college, you need to listen to this. We're about to massively increase access to Pell Grants. It's going to be a lot more affordable for people to go to college. And that's wonderful, wonderful news. And, you know, really, Jack and Jennifer, those are the three big ticket items that we're talking about right now. And that's what Obama was talking about, you know, when he ran for president. We're talking about health care. We're talking about clean energy. We're talking about profound and expanded access to higher education. There are a lot of other things. Yeah, I haven't even talked about the Supreme Court nomination of Sonia Sotomayor, which is really exciting.
Well, I was hoping you'd say a few words. What's the sense of the Hill? We hear all the talking heads.
Well, she rocks, and she's going to get nominated.
Well,
there you have it.
Okay, well, that's all that. Are we still, is the anticipated Republican filibuster going to actually happen?
No. There will be no filibuster. If there's any filibuster, it will be like a half day. It will be symbolic only. There will be no filibuster. No. I mean, it's this actually, in some ways, was a safe appointment. Gosh, should I even say that? I mean, the first Latina woman ever nominated to the U.S. Supreme Court. And I'm describing it as a safe appointment. I do want to say one thing.
Well, safe from everybody but Republicans, bunch
yeah,
of white guys.
I do want to make one point about this nominee. She was an undergraduate, a freshman or a sophomore at Princeton University. And this would have been in the 1970s, okay? And there were two gay people who shared a dormitory room, and some students who were anti-gay, they broke into their room and ransacked it, right? And just tore it apart.
Okay.
And our nominee, Sonia Sotomayor, organized a petition where she got 20 other students and faculty members to protest this. And this would have been in the 1970s, like early to mid-1970s.
Which would have been really unusual.
She wrote a letter about the importance of diversity and standing up for bold ideas. That was the quote she used, bold ideas on college campuses. Mm. So even as a very young, 18, 19-year-old woman of Puerto Rican descent who was raised and grew up in the Bronx, that kind of tells you, that kind of presents a picture for you of where she was coming from.
Well, I can understand why the conservatives have a problem with her. You know, when you're devoid of bold ideas, anyone with bold ideas is a threat.
Well, the conservatives have a problem with her because she was appointed by President Obama.
Well, but she was originally appointed by George Bush Sr.
George Bush.
Yes, although before that, she was appointed by President Clinton. You know, so yeah, this is a woman with a lot of judicial experience.
Right, but actually it was George Bush Sr. first.
Oh, Jack, I stand corrected.
Yes.
Yeah. You're correct. He, George H.W. Bush appointed her to the district court level. Clinton appointed her to the circuit court level. Yeah, you're right. You're right.
Which means that she has been before Congress numerous times, answering for everything she's ever done, and they still have problems?
Yeah. What are you going to do?
Right. Well, David.
Yes.
This was a great report tonight. And so we will talk to you next month. Just give us, how can we contact you?
Well, I'm the communications director for U.S. Action. Our website is www.usaction.org. We also have a sister organization, truemajority.org. And you can visit our blog at truemajority.org/ aggressive progressives.
Okay.
Very good.
David Elliott joins us the first Monday of every month here on Queer Voices. And next we're going to go to News Wrap from This Way Out.
I'm Chris Wilson.
And I'm Pam Marshall.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending May 30th, 2009. The California Supreme Court has upheld Proposition 8, the ballot measure approved by 52% of the state's voters last November to constitutionally ban same-gender marriage. The ruling, announced on May 26th, revoked the same court's decision on May 15th last year that denying marriage equality to gay and lesbian couples was a violation of constitutionally protected fundamental rights. Proposition 8 overturned that ruling. The court declared this week, however, that there was no retroactive provision in the measure and that the estimated 18,000 marriages of lesbian and gay couples that were held between its original ruling and the passage of Proposition 8 will remain valid. Supporters of the ballot measure had asked the court during oral arguments in March to annul them. In the 6-1 decision written by Chief Justice Ronald George, who also wrote the original marriage equality ruling last year, the High Court rejected arguments by its opponents that Proposition 8 was not a simple amendment requiring a simple majority vote, but a fundamental change to the California Constitution, a revision that would have first needed the legislature's approval.
The court essentially said in its 136-page majority ruling that only the word marriage was being denied to same-gender couples who can enter into legal domestic partnerships in California that provide virtually all of the state rights of marriage. Justice George wrote that Proposition 8 carves out a narrow and limited exception to state constitutional rights, reserving the official designation of the term marriage for the union of opposite-sex couples as a matter of state constitutional law.
Justice Carlos Moreno was a lone dissenter. He said that denying same-gender couples the right to marry strikes at the core of the promise of equality that underlies our California Constitution. Promising treatment that is almost equal is fundamentally different from ensuring truly equal treatment. He wrote that this week's ruling places at risk the state constitutional rights of all disfavored minorities. It weakens the status of our state constitution as a bulwark of fundamental rights for minorities protected from the will of the majority. Proposition 8 supporters are threatening to sponsor a recall vote to remove Justice Moreno from the bench.
Marriage equality supporters took to the streets across the state to protest the ruling, and in actions that would have been unheard of even a year ago in several other cities across the country. Chanting, "Shame on you," thousands protested in San Francisco. About 175 people were arrested during a peaceful civil disobedience action as they blocked an intersection near the Supreme Court building. Each was released later in the day. In sharp contrast to the so-called White Night riots of May 1979, many of those making the arrests were members of the force's LGBT Police Officers Association.
About 2,000 people rallied against the ruling in West Hollywood. Some drew peace signs and other messages on the street with chalk. Others carried American flags and signs that read, "California needs love, not hate." An equally peaceful protest in the Orange County city of Santa Ana drew an estimated 600 people. Hundreds also gathered in Palm Springs. A few couples carried signs that read, "Still married but not equal." A crowd estimated at from 5,000 to 10,000 people hit the streets in San Diego. Among those speaking at the march-ending rally were Mayor Jerry Sanders and his lesbian daughter Lisa. A noisy five-hour sit-in at the county clerk's office the following day launched when a gay couple was denied a marriage license, ended quietly in the early evening without arrests.
Five activists were arrested after staging a similar sit-in at the clerk and recorder's office in Denver, Colorado. Other mainstream media reports we've seen about protest actions in some 100 cities across the U.S. included hundreds marching in Seattle, Washington, Atlanta, Georgia, Dallas, Texas, Louisville, Kentucky, and Phoenix, Arizona. Dozens also protested in Lincoln, Nebraska, while thousands marched in New York City from near the West Village's fabled Stonewall Inn to Union Square to protest the ruling and to demand that the state legislature pass a pending marriage equality bill.
Two high-profile attorneys have announced a controversial federal lawsuit against Proposition 8. And California equality activists are vowing to qualify another initiative for the state ballot next year to overturn the same-gender marriage ban. Stay tuned for a lot more about the Proposition 8 ruling and reaction to it.
In other news this week, the Church of Scotland approved its first ever openly gay minister, but issued a two-year moratorium on similar appointments. Meanwhile, the Church of Sweden elected its first ever lesbian bishop.
In the U.S., Nevada's governor, as expected, vetoed a domestic partnership bill passed by state lawmakers. But New Hampshire's legislature and governor have reportedly agreed on compromise wording on a marriage equality bill that strengthens exemptions for religious groups. We'll have more on these stories and other LGBT news from around the world next time on This Way Out.
That's News Wrap for the week ending May 30th, 2009. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. For This Way Out, I'm Chris Wilson.
And I'm Pam Marshall.
From mid-June of 2008 until Election Day in November, wedding bells rang out aplenty across California for same-gender couples. A ruling by the state Supreme Court had found marriage discrimination to be a violation of the California Constitution. Then the voters passed Proposition 8 by a narrow margin, and the wedding bells were silenced. Now, that same court has issued another decision on the issue, a mixed blessing at best for supporters of civil marriage equality. Pacifica Radio's California Evening News reported on the so-called Day of Decision, May 26, 2009.
From Pacifica Radio, KPFA in Berkeley, and KPFK in Los Angeles, this is the Evening News with Mark Maracle. I'm John Hamilton.
California Supreme Court upheld the state's same-sex marriage ban today, but said the 18,000 same-sex weddings that took place before the prohibition passed are still valid, a ruling decried by gay rights activists as a hollow victory. In a 6-1 decision written by Chief Justice Ron George, the court rejected arguments that the ban approved by the voters last fall was such a fundamental change in the California Constitution that it first needed the legislature's approval. As for the thousands of couples who tied the knot last year in the 5 months that same-sex marriage was legal in California, the court said it is well-established principle that an amendment is not retroactive unless it is clear that the voters intended it to be, and that, the court said, was not the case with Proposition 8. Moreover, the court said it would be too disruptive to apply Prop 8 retroactively and dissolve all same-sex marriages. While gay rights advocates accused the court of failing to protect a minority group from the will of the majority, the justices said that the state's governing framework gives voters almost unfettered ability to change the California Constitution. The court said while the ban denies gay couples use of the term marriage, it does not fundamentally disturb their basic right to establish an officially recognized and protected family relationship with the person of one's choice and to raise children within the family. California still allows same-sex couples to form domestic partnerships. In their 136-page majority ruling, the justices said it is not their job to address whether the ban is wise public policy, but to decide whether it is constitutionally valid while setting aside their own personal beliefs and values. Justice Carlos Moreno, who had been under consideration as President Barack Obama's nominee to the U.S. Supreme Court, was the lone dissenter. He said denying same-sex couples the right to wed strikes at the core of the promise of equality that underlies the California Constitution. He said it represents a drastic and far-reaching change. Christopher Martinez reports.
Feelings were strong outside of the state Supreme Courthouse in San Francisco, where the High Court upheld a voter-passed ban on marriage for same-sex couples. People on the losing side of the Proposition 8 lawsuit say they're sad and disappointed at the ruling, but they're vowing to continue the fight. Dennis Herrera is a city attorney for San Francisco, one of 11 counties that joined the lawsuit against Prop 8. He sees momentum coming from states like Iowa that have recently allowed marriage for gay and lesbian couples.
Iowa took a lot of their decision from the California Supreme Court's decision last year. So clearly, I think the tide of history is on marriage equality side, and you see other jurisdictions, including Iowa, ruling in favor of marriage equality. I think that it's only a matter of time until we have that throughout the country, and that's something that I'm gratified by, is that we should have equality for everybody here in the state of California and the United States.
Gerardo Marin and his partner Jay Thomas were plaintiffs in the Prop 8 lawsuit. Marin says as a Mexican-American, it's nothing new to have to fight for his rights. But he says he is shocked and dismayed he's been denied his rights by people he helped protect by serving in the Air Force for 4 years.
No vivemos en una teocracia. Vivemos en una democracia.
Marin says we do not live in a theocracy, but in a democracy. Without equality, there's no justice, and without justice, there's no freedom.
Sin la justicia no existe la libertad.
Shannon Minter is a lawyer for the National Center for Lesbian Rights and one of the lawyers that argued the Prop 8 lawsuit, as well as last year's marriage cases. He says this is a sad day for people who hope to see the court restore their status as equal citizens.
The court has crushed those hopes and dreams today, and it's a terrible body blow to equality and a terrible blow to our community. The human impact of this decision is going to be devastating and overwhelming. You know, the court's job is to act as a check on the abuse of majority power, and to protect minority rights, and to stand up for equal protection. And the court sidestepped that responsibility with this decision today.
Erin Carter and her wife, Carrie McCoy, wore their white wedding dresses as they waited for the court's decision in front of the courthouse. Their marriage is still valid because of when they were married. Carter says she's glad the court ruled their marriages are valid, but she still sees the ruling as a call to action.
It means that we're part of a movement and that we need to fight harder for everyone. It's not fair that we have some rights that other people in our community don't have, and that's not what this country is founded on, and it's not going to stay that way, because it makes absolutely no sense. You can't have a percentage of a population of people with rights and then the other percentage of that same population without those rights. And so that discrepancy is going to cause further litigation, and we hope to be involved in that in any way we can.
Opponents of Prop 8 are already mobilizing to overturn the decision. Kate Kendall is director of the National Center for Lesbian Rights.
There is a smear on our Constitution, and the only way to get rid of it is at the ballot box.
The question now is when to go to the ballot. Some want to keep the momentum going by aiming at the 2010 election, while others want to wait until 2012 to have more time to organize. They have until late September to make that decision. Reporting from San Francisco for Pacifica Radio, I'm Christopher Martinez.
In San Francisco's Castro District, the large rainbow gay pride flag that flies in the neighborhood's Harvey Milk Plaza had been lowered to half-staff and a black stripe put on the top. In the state capitol, organizers of the successful Proposition 8 campaign celebrated their victory, while members of the state legislature's Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, and Transgender Caucus decried the decision. Sean Hamilton reports from Sacramento.
Members of the ProtectMarriage.com campaign were clearly pleased with the state Supreme Court's decision, characterizing the ruling as a victory for the people. Yes on 8 campaign chair Ron Prentice.
We're very encouraged by the Supreme Court choosing to yield power to the will of the people. So we expect celebrations across the state throughout this coming week. And many have awaited this. It's been long awaited. And we are looking forward to the opportunity to share this with literally 200, 300,000 people who participated.
We are going to come back to This Way Out for the rest of that report. But first, we want to get to something a little bit more urgent. This is Queer Voices.
And that urgent thing is Paul Scott, the executive director of Equality Texas, and he's been on hold, so we want to get him on the air. This is Brian Levinka.
And Jennifer Renee.
And Paul, are you there?
Yes, I've never been called an urgent thing before.
Oh, of course. Well,
our urgent friend.
The urgency is the Texas legislature has just completed, I understand, and we wanted to get the lowdown on what's going on and what's all happening down there in Austin.
What happened in Austin this year?
Well, I think we had, a lot of interesting things happened and progress that was being made. I think we started off the session in January with a new speaker, Joe Strauss out of San Antonio, which really enabled many progressive organizations to not have to fight off defensively any anti-equality issues or some of the more heinous issues generally that we see being kind of put forth out there as kind of test votes in order to be used in election cycles. And so I think, first of all, we saw that happening. And then for our purposes, when it comes to gay and lesbian and transgender issues, we had over 17 bills that were inclusive of either sexual orientation and or gender identity and expression filed with a really broad-based group of legislators that were working to file legislation for the community. And we had six hearings on a wide range of bills on our issues, which we felt comfortable and really great about. And then two of those got into the calendars committee, and one got voted out to the floor of the House. So compared to the last, three sessions before this, it really was a much better session for us. We were hoping to get at least our anti-bullying and harassment bill out, for a vote on the floor of the House. We were 10 bills away before the deadline hit on second reading a couple of weeks ago, and that really wasn't anything due to our bill. It was more so kind of a misstep in how the bills were handled, and it just happened, unfortunately. The intent really, and what we know, was the intent actually was to get to that anti-bullying and harassment bill and have a vote on it. We're kind of going forward on it.
Is there going to be a special session?
That is the $64,000 question right now. As of today, some really interesting procedural moves were made at the last minute to get the sunset bills extended for another 2 years into the next session, general session in 2011. So I think there was a lot of talk around a special session with several of the sunset bills. But a lot of those have been either extended or other bills have been kind of carried over as amendments in other bills. So the only bill really that hasn't been passed that there may be a special session on, there may be other issues as well, but big question is, will Perry call a special session on voter ID?
Do you think that's even possible? Is he so dead set against having that he would call a special session?
No one really knows. I mean, I think, it's all kind of, armchair quarterbacking from, talking to the offices and the legislature, and then just kind of seeing what's happening and looking at the blogosphere. You just don't really ever know. And, of course, there could be changed circumstances over the next couple of years anyway, whether it's the economy or whether other issues may pop up that may necessitate a special session. But no one really, I think kind of it's gone from, yes, we're going to have a special session, to it being called, in 2 weeks on June 15th, to now a lot of people feel like maybe we won't have a special session.
Well, what happened with CHIPS in the end?
I was following that a little bit. CHIPS did not pass. I mean, Garnet Coleman, Representative Coleman of Houston, sent out an email blast this evening about that it did not pass.
Oh, darn.
It's been, kind of a football that was passed around. He's has done a phenomenal job in trying to get that pass. It's an issue that he is very passionate about. And
well, we should all be passionate about.
Oh, definitely. It just really kind of boggles our mind to think that we're not providing health insurance and access to health insurance, particularly health insurance, where it's not costing the taxpayers money. I mean, when you're providing this type of health insurance, the families are on a need-based system, and so if they're earning a certain level of income, then they're paying for the premium. They're not, the government's not paying for them, and so they're able to access insurance in order to make sure their children have health care.
I know. I just that has always boggled my mind since it was cut by $200 million sometime back during the early 2000s. As far as what's going on up there, did our friends stay our friends, and did we find some new friends this session?
We definitely found some new friends, multiple new friends, particularly on the progressive side of the aisle. But I think we had, you know, definitely some good conversations with Republicans about some of our key pieces of legislation, particularly around the anti-bullying and harassment bill, and also some ongoing conversations around the UT competitive benefits bill that would apply to the UT system and to the A&M system, which would allow for those systems to adopt benefits according to their needs, and they would define what that would be, and would give them the latitude to do that. And it didn't define exactly what that would be, but it would allow them for whether it's same-sex partners or whether it's for an elderly parent or whether it's for, you know, a sibling they're taking care of, or, you know, whether it's an, you know, opposite-sex domestic partner. It would give them the opportunity to provide, you know, health insurance benefits, access to those as well, so that we could attract talent to the state and build our university systems up and our research systems up so that Texas, as it should be, would be the premier state for people to come in and do research and have the peer institutions that are recognized around the world.
Yeah, many people don't understand that that's in the competition for the brightest minds in America. Texas has a bad rap because of the representation that we've had from Perry and the conservative movement to limit the ability of our colleges and universities from being able to recruit the best teachers.
Yeah, we're forcing university. I think every university wants to have competitive programs, but, you know, actually in the Texas law, it's mandated that UT, University of Texas System and A&M, and be recognized as peer institutions and be competitive and provide access to faculty and staff, you know, access to resources in order to be competitive. But at the same time now, they forced systems to tie one hand behind their back. And that's where we had testimony from people at the UT system here, you know, specifically where we have lost faculty coming into Texas because of this whole issue of not being able to provide health insurance benefits for another person in the household.
Wasn't that just short-sighted legislation in the past from individuals who thought they just didn't realize the consequences of their actions?
Yeah, I mean, most people don't realize is that there's actually a specific insurance code provision that applies specifically to UT system and to the A&M system. It's something separate. It's not something in the general insurance code. And so it really is narrowly written, and that's the, kind of the sticking point currently, is that it defines how you provide insurance to dependents into three categories, and it's fairly narrowly construed. And so that's the area that we were looking to have amended to allow university systems to define another category of dependent.
What legislation surprised you this year?
I think, first of all, to kind of talk about our issues, was we met with a group of family law attorneys towards the middle of session, and it really was the Friday that bills were due to be into the drafting office to be drafted, not to be filed, but to be drafted. It was right before our lobby day. And we met with a couple of family law attorneys talking about the whole issue around the reissuance of the birth certificate for adopted children. And in Texas, if you reissue a birth certificate, it has to list one male father and one female mother. You cannot list two people of the same sex as the parents on the reissued birth certificate. And this is really causing a lot of problems. For example, there was a couple in Texas that adopted a child, moved to Massachusetts. Well, they're married in Massachusetts now, and now they can't get a birth certificate with both their names on it. So how does one parent travel with their child that they don't have legal documents reflecting, you know, that they are the parent of the child, actually, in the birth certificate? And, you know, of course, birth certificates are kind of the foundational elements for, you know, whether it's passport or whatever it may be. And, of course, when you're traveling or doing, you know, enrolling a child in school, whatever the reason may be, you know, you really need to have the birth certificate as kind of that kind of, you know, gold standard of proof of who your parents are. And so we got that bill drafted, and Rafael Chia of Dallas filed it right away, and we got a hearing on it in the Public Health Committee. And actually had probably the best testimony of the session in regards to that issue and that bill. We had a 10-year-old here out of Austin. His parents live here, Mason Marriott Voss, just basically got a standing ovation from the committee when he testified about his parents. And, you know, it didn't get out of committee, but it definitely got more traction than we were expecting and anticipating, particularly for something that was happened really very quickly as a bill to get filed.
Well, one of the things that I know that I'm aware of, I don't know if any other people are aware of, but a lot of our great gains within the House sort of are dead on arrival in the Senate, are they not?
I think so, generally. I mean, I think, you know, as with the House, you saw it kind of being flip-flopped this year in the way the legislature worked, is that the Senate blew up and the House was kind of the calm force, but sometimes you see the opposite happening. You know, there still is a, you know, a smaller progressive minority in the Senate of 12 Democratic senators, and then you have, 19 Republican senators in the Senate. And as a result of that, it's very difficult, first of all, to get something, you know, into the Senate and passed, and then keeping it clean, and so they can bring it to conference committee between the two houses. We were ready with our anti-bullying harassment bill. We had Senator Davis out of Fort Worth, who was willing to carry the bill for us in the Senate, and we were working to get some additional authors and sponsors on that. So we felt like that one probably had the best chance for us if we just could get it out of the House. We are now kind of, with the work we've done this session, and we're priming ourselves to make sure we have companion bills filed in both houses, which shows the strength of the work that we as an organization at Equality Texas are doing. But it really kind of reflects the fact of our membership participating in Lobby Day and engaging their legislators and their senators on these issues are really empowering us to do that. We can't do it without our members and people speaking up and standing up for equality here in Texas.
We're speaking with Executive Director
Paul Scott of Equality Texas. Now, Paul, tell us a little bit for our listeners what Equality Texas is and what it does for the GLBT community in Texas.
Equality Texas, we are the statewide organization that advocates and lobbies for equality based on sexual orientation and gender identity and expression. So we look for Texans of all sexual orientations and all gender identities and expressions. We fight for equality so we have a better state.
And where can they get more information?
We have a great new website. We're still, you know, loading it in, but it's www.equalitytexas.org. And that's where you can sign up to get our e-newsletters and our volunteer alerts. We'll be coming into a community near you now that we're through the session and continuing to do training and also training people to lobby their state reps and their state senators in their districts while we're out of session, because we need to do the work now to prepare for 2011.
Well, thank you, Paul. We appreciate all the work that you do and for coming on Queer Voices tonight. And
I wanted to thank you and acknowledge you specifically, as well as your whole team there in Austin. Equality Texas has really done great things in the legislature, and I've been involved with you for a number of legislative sessions, and it's just wonderful work. And keep up the good work.
Well, thank you, Jennifer. And I have to give a shout-out to our political policy director, Randall Terrell, who's just done a great job this session.
Well, thank you, Randall, and thank you, Paul Scott.
And this is Queer Voices.
Thank you.
You listen to KPFT, you enjoy some of our fine programming, and you have done your part to keep us commercial-free by calling in a pledge of support. Hats off to you for taking that first step. But before you settle into that fantastic feeling, don't forget, you still need to send in that pledge of support to finalize your promise to KPFT. But be warned, that fantastic feeling will soon follow. Thanks for supporting KPFT Houston.
if it takes all night. It takes all night. Takes all night.
That song was called, obviously, If It Takes All Night. That was Four Dykes from their 2001 album, Hot Flash. At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. Now, more of Queer Voices with Jack Valensky and the entire Queer Voices crew.
June of 2008 until Election Day in November, wedding bells rang out aplenty across California for same-gender couples. A ruling by the state Supreme Court had found marriage discrimination to be a violation of the California Constitution. Then the voters passed Proposition 8 by a narrow margin, and the wedding bells were silenced. Now, that same court has issued another decision on the issue, a mixed blessing at best for supporters of civil marriage equality. Pacifica Radio's California Evening News reported on the so-called Day of Decision, May 26, 2009.
From Pacifica Radio, KPFA in Berkeley, and KPFK in Los Angeles, this is the Evening News with Mark Maracle. I'm John Hamilton.
California Supreme Court upheld the state's same-sex marriage ban today, but said the 18,000 same-sex weddings that took place before the prohibition passed are still valid, a ruling decried by gay rights activists as a hollow victory. In a 6-1 decision written by Chief Justice Ron George, the court rejected arguments that the ban approved by the voters last fall was such a fundamental change in the California Constitution that it first needed the legislature's approval. As for the thousands of couples who tied the knot last year, in the 5 months that same-sex marriage was legal in California, the court said it is well-established principle that an amendment is not retroactive unless it is clear that the voters intended it to be, and that, the court said, was not the case with Proposition 8. Moreover, the court said it would be too disruptive to apply Prop 8 retroactively and dissolve all same-sex marriages. While gay rights advocates accused the court of failing to protect a minority group from the will of the majority, the justices said that the state's governing framework gives voters almost unfettered ability to change the California Constitution. The court said while the ban denies gay couples use of the term marriage, it does not fundamentally disturb their basic right to establish an officially recognized and protected family relationship with the person of one's choice and to raise children within the family. California still allows same-sex couples to form domestic partnerships. In their 136-page majority ruling, the justices said it is not their job to address whether the ban is wise public policy, but to decide whether it is constitutionally valid while setting aside their own personal beliefs and values. Justice Carlos Moreno, who had been under consideration as President Barack Obama's nominee to the U.S. Supreme Court, was the lone dissenter. He said denying same-sex couples the right to wed strikes at the core of the promise of equality that underlies the California Constitution. He said it represents a drastic and far-reaching change. Christopher Martinez reports.
Feelings were strong outside of the state Supreme Courthouse in San Francisco, where the High Court upheld a voter-passed ban on marriage for same-sex couples. People on the losing side of the Proposition 8 lawsuit say they're sad and disappointed at the ruling, but they're vowing to continue the fight. Dennis Herrera is a city attorney for San Francisco, one of 11 counties that joined the lawsuit against Prop 8. He sees momentum coming from states like Iowa that have recently allowed marriage for gay and lesbian couples.
Iowa took a lot of their decision from the California Supreme Court's decision last year. So clearly, I think the tide of history is on marriage equality side, and you see other jurisdictions, including Iowa, ruling in favor of marriage equality. I think that it's only a matter of time until we have that throughout the country, and that's something that I'm gratified by, is that we should have equality for everybody here in the state of California and the United States.
Gerardo Marin and his partner Jay Thomas were plaintiffs in the Prop 8 lawsuit. Marin says as a Mexican-American, it's nothing new to have to fight for his rights. But he says he is shocked and dismayed he's been denied his rights by people he helped protect by serving in the Air Force for 4 years.
No vivimos en una teocracia. Vivimos en una democracia.
Marin says we do not live in a theocracy, but in a democracy. Without equality, there's no justice, and without justice, there's no freedom.
No existe la libertad.
Shannon Minter is a lawyer for the National Center for Lesbian Rights and one of the lawyers that argued the Prop 8 lawsuit as well as last year's marriage cases. He says this is a sad day for people who hope to see the court restore their status as equal citizens.
The court has crushed those hopes and dreams today, and it's a terrible body blow to equality and a terrible blow to our community. The human impact of this decision is going to be devastating and overwhelming. You know, the court's job is to act as a check on the abuse of majority power, to protect minority rights, and to stand up for equal protection. And the court sidestepped that responsibility with this decision today.
Erin Carter and her wife, Carrie McCoy, wore their white wedding dresses as they waited for the court's decision in front of the courthouse. Their marriage is still valid because of when they were married. Carter says she's glad the court ruled their marriages are valid, but she still sees the ruling as a call to action.
It means that we're part of a movement and that we need to fight harder for everyone. It's not fair that we have some rights that other people in our community don't have, and that's not what this country is founded on, and it's not going to stay that way because it makes absolutely no sense. You can't have a percentage of a population of people with rights and then the other percentage of that same population without those rights. And so that's, that discrepancy is going to cause further litigation, and we hope to be involved in that in any way we can.
Opponents of Prop 8 are already mobilizing to overturn the decision. Kate Kendall is director of the National Center for Lesbian Rights.
There is a smear on our Constitution, and the only way to get rid of it is at the ballot box.
The question now is when to go to the ballot. Some want to keep the momentum going by aiming at the 2010 election, while others want to wait until 2012 to have more time to organize. They have until late September to make that decision. Reporting from San Francisco for Pacifica Radio, I'm Christopher Martinez.
In San Francisco's Castro District, the large rainbow gay pride flag that flies in the neighborhood's Harvey Milk Plaza had been lowered to half staff and a black stripe put on the top. In the state capitol, organizers of the successful Proposition 8 campaign celebrated their victory, while members of the state legislature's Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, and Transgender Caucus decried the decision. Sean Hamilton reports from Sacramento.
Members of the ProtectMarriage.com campaign were clearly pleased with the state Supreme Court's decision, characterizing the ruling as a victory for the people. Yes on 8 campaign chair Ron Prentice.
We're very encouraged by the Supreme Court choosing to yield power to the will of the people. So we expect celebrations across the state throughout this coming week. And many have awaited this. It's been long awaited. And we are looking forward to the opportunity to share this with literally 200, 300,000 people who participated by walking door to door, knocking on doors, calling 10 million different California citizens. And we're pleased and encouraged by the decision of the Supreme Court.
While the ProtectMarriage.com campaign is savoring its victory, it promises to continue to advocate for what it calls traditional marriage.
We are not resting on our laurels. We're moving forward with an aggressive education and outreach program to the people of California to talk about the benefits of traditional marriage.
The Yes on 8 General Counsel, Andrew Puno.
We're going to work in the ethnic communities throughout California, in every media market and geography throughout the state, in the churches, with young people, everybody that we can reach to talk about why this institution is worth preserving.
The Protect Marriage campaign said same-sex marriage advocates had their best chance to win in 2008 due to a confluence of factors. They still lost, so the campaign feels it can overcome any future political challenges to traditional marriage. The tone was highly charged at a Capitol press conference held by the legislature's Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, and Transgender Caucus. The chair of the LGBT caucus, Senator Mark Leno, author of several bills to legalize same-sex marriage, thinks history will not look kindly upon the court's decision.
Watch out, everyone. Who's next? Who is that 51 or 52% going to come after next? They are unbridled as a result of this Supreme Court decision. And consider the messiness of the situation our court has now constructed. So, yes, we will be back at the ballot next year, and we will prevail, because public opinion is moving in an unprecedented and historical speed in our direction. But with this court's decision, our opponents could be back in 2012. And depending upon who comes out and what happens, money spent, misinformation and lies permeated through expensive television commercials, we don't know what the outcome would be. And you see, suddenly civil rights are just a game of ping pong.
Berkeley Democrat Nancy Skinner said the court's decision will affect all Californians, not just those in the LGBT community.
Denial of this fundamental right of marriage so fundamentally affects all of us. And as the mother of a gay daughter, knowing now, because she was not in a situation with a partner where she was ready to get married in the brief window where it was allowed, she now cannot. And thus, my grandchildren will not have the same rights that others, straight couples, have. That is wrong. And we have to change it. And I expect it better from our court. The court exists to protect us.
For Pacifica Radio, I'm Sean Hamilton at the State Capitol.
In Los Angeles, plaintiffs in the original suit that led to the short window of same-sex marriage criticized the state high court's decision upholding Proposition 8, and community leaders of faith and ethnic groups in the city in support of gay marriage voiced their backing for a new education campaign on the issue. Dan Fritz reports from L.A.
Robin Tyler and Diane Olson, the first couple to wed in L.A. County, and original plaintiffs in the state Supreme Court case that first allowed same-sex marriage in California, were anxious to hear word from the court through their attorney, Gloria Allred.
We can't wait for it.
I don't need to know. Okay.
It's really our lives.
I want to know.
You
hold
can do the legal in a minute.
Allred, who filed one of the suits to challenge Proposition 8 on behalf of the couple, delivered the news that their marriage was safe. But Diane Olson called the decision a loss.
It's awkward for me that I may have the privileges and the right of being married, and so many of our community cannot. That doesn't feel real good to me.
Robin Tyler echoed what many leaders in the lesbian, gay, and allied communities said after hearing the ruling.
It's not a matter of if we're going to win. It's a matter of when we're going to win.
6 miles away in Leimert Park, interfaith and ethnic community leaders in support of gay marriage announced their support for a new initiative to overturn Proposition 8. L.A. City Attorney Rocky Delgadillo was there. Last year, he joined the state Supreme Court case on behalf of the city of Los Angeles against the gay marriage ban.
One of the things that I think Los Angeles stands for is a celebration of diversity, of our differences. This is what Los Angeles stands for. We have these big dreamers here who have these very unique and extremely far-reaching ideas. Well, those ideas and those dreams have changed the world, and we hope that Los Angeles will continue to change the world and bring us closer to justice for all Californians, not just the majority.
Marshall Wong is co-chair of Asian and Pacific Islanders for Marriage Equality Los Angeles Coalition.
Between now and when we go back to the ballot box, at the earliest time that it makes sense, we will continue to strengthen our work with faith communities, educating ethnic media, and building coalitions with other communities of color.
Lori Jean, director of the LA Gay and Lesbian Center.
I am here today to send a message to the fair-minded people of California and to those on the other side, those who want California to be a bastion of bigotry and discrimination. Mark my words. Today's decision is not the end of this fight. Tonight we take to the streets.
Dan Fritz, Pacifica Radio, Los Angeles.
The day after the California Supreme Court's ruling upholding Proposition 8 was announced, two high-profile attorneys announced their filing of a lawsuit in U.S. District Court challenging the validity of the measure on federal constitutional grounds. Theodore Olson and David Boies, who opposed each other in the infamous U.S. Supreme Court Bush v. Gore election challenge in 2000, say they expect their lawsuit to eventually be heard by that same court. They were hired by a newly formed advocacy group, the American Foundation for Equal Rights, to represent a gay male couple and a lesbian couple who've been denied the right to marry in California. Ted Olson represented George W. Bush in the 2000 election case.
We are two lawyers from opposite ends of the political spectrum who have come together to support one of the most important issues of our time. The case we filed is not about liberal or conservative, Democrat or Republican. We're here in part to symbolize that. This case is about the equal rights guaranteed to every American under the United States Constitution. This case is about ensuring that every American is treated equally under the law. California has created a separate relationship for same-sex couples called domestic partnerships. That is separate, and that is not equal. It is unconstitutional.
David Boies represented Al Gore in that 2000 election case.
We have tolerated discrimination and injustice in the past because we have been blinded to the fact that the person being discriminated against is simply another human being, another American. That blindness has enabled us historically not to recognize the equality of people based on sex, based on race, based on religion, and now based on sexual orientation. This lawsuit is about the courts saying that no matter how blind people may be, the Constitution guarantees that everyone deserves the equal rights that every human being is entitled to. And we go to court because that is the place that those equal rights have been established time and again over the last 100 years.
The lawyers said they were encouraged by recent pro-gay rulings by what's been considered a generally conservative U.S. Supreme Court, overturning Colorado's civil rights denying Amendment 2 and a Texas case that ordered the repeal of all state sodomy laws. They also drew comparisons to the 1967 Supreme Court Loving v. Virginia decision that overturned state laws banning interracial marriage. Again, David Boyce.
Court has even held that a state can't prevent prisoners from getting married. There have been numerous decisions by the United States Supreme Court that marriage is a fundamental right guaranteed by the federal Constitution.
Ted Olson elaborated on why they were suing in federal court.
This is a case that challenges the status of individuals in California who wish to marry under the rights granted to them by the federal Constitution, the United States Constitution, the Due Process Clause and the Equal Protection Clause of the United States Constitution.
Virtually every major U.S. LGBT advocacy group, however, including Lambda Legal, the National Center for Lesbian Rights, Freedom to Marry, the Human Rights Campaign, and the National Gay and Lesbian Task Force, along with the American Civil Liberties Union, expressed deep concerns about the Prop 8 lawsuit. Some questioned the timing and motives of the big-name lead attorneys and noted that neither has worked on the issue in the past. Those groups' joint press release warned that a loss in the nation's highest court could set back the marriage equality movement, at least at the federal level, for decades. In the nearer term, there's general consensus among LGBT activists to qualify another initiative for the California ballot. The target now appears to be in November 2010 to repeal Proposition 8 and return marriage equality to the Golden State. With lessons presumably learned from the Prop 8 debacle, energy will be focused on changing the hearts and minds of voters who supported the marriage ban and doing far better outreach to people of color communities. Meet in the Middle, held in Fresno, the conservative heart of Central California, seemed to kick off that effort. It was pre-planned for the first Saturday after the California Supreme Court announcement to either celebrate or protest the ruling. Academy Award-winning Milk screenwriter Dustin Lance Black, openly gay actor T.R. Knight, and Oscar winner Charlize Theron were among those lending their celebrity to a rally outside City Hall, which drew from 3,000 to 5,000 people. It capped off a 14-mile march from the neighboring Central California town of Selma to pay tribute to the historic days of the African-American civil rights movement. Dennis Hart filed this report from the rally for San Francisco's KCBS News Radio.
This crowd of several thousand people has been loud and it has been boisterous for the past couple of hours, chanting and cheering as speaker after speaker talked about and demanded the right of gays to marry. There have been young speakers, there have been old speakers, and there have been star speakers like Eric McCormick of NBC's Will and Grace, who said gay marriage won't destroy the institution of marriage, it will spruce it up. Other speakers, the rally, the civil rights movement of the 21st century, and some called for a march on Washington. Plenty of people have been holding up signs over the past couple of hours, some reading repeal Proposition 8 in 2010, and one reading, if Jesus had two dads, why can't I? Lots of people have come from the Bay Area, many have come from Southern California, but the vast majority are from here in the Central Valley, a remarkable turnout indeed in an area that overwhelmingly supported Prop 8 last November. The rally showing no signs of waning in this, as it enters its third hour, the crowd still full of energy and enthusiasm. Reporting live from Fresno, Dennis Hart for KCBS.
We're gonna keep on walking proudly. Keep on loving boldly. gonna keep on walking forward. Keep on walking forward. Keep on walking forward. Never turning back. Never turning back.
We are actually going to have more from This Way Out coming up. Next, however, will be the Houston Pride Band. This is Queer Voices.
That was a piece of music from Houston's own Pride Band, and in the studio tonight, we have myself, Brian Levinka.
And this is Jennifer Renee, and it's awfully crowded in here with the whole band.
Well, not really. We have the marketing director of the Houston Pride Band, Rudy Martinez. Welcome, Rudy.
Thank you very much. I want to say hello to all your listeners, and thank you for having me on air again.
Oh, absolutely. It's good to have you here.
Well, as we know, June is Pride Month, and the Pride Band has a special concert coming up, and Rudy's here to tell us about the concert.
Yeah, we're having our season finale concert, and it's going to be occurring at the Zilker Hall in the Hobby Center for the Performing Arts.
Mm.
Now, how did y'all get that deal, because that's a pretty nice venue.
Well, actually, we started last year with the 30th anniversary concert, and so now we want to kind of make the Zilker Hall performing at the Hobby Center performing kind of a yearly thing.
And what's the acoustics like in there?
Well, if you can tell from that recording just now, that was recorded there in Zilker Hall, and that was really nice.
Wonderful.
That's a very fine piece of music you play. Now, what can we expect at the concert? What sort of music?
Well, we're going to be playing the theme for this year is music beyond fences, music without borders. And this particular concert is going to bring around some music from all over the world. And we're going to be playing pieces such as First Suite in E Flat by Gustav Holst, if you're familiar with the Planets. Holst also did the Planets.
Mm-hmm.
And we're also going to be playing Evita.
Don't cry for me. I won't sing.
Yeah, I was expecting that. That's okay. That's okay.
I get in trouble for singing. David always yells at me. I sing in
the
car.
If you were Madonna, it'd be okay.
Well, I'm usually Madonna at Halloween. No, I'm just kidding.
Let's go back to the
band. That's a whole other story.
That's a whole other segment on a different show.
That's a whole other Oprah. Thank you.
Yes. And what other music are you going to have?
Well, we're also going to be playing the Kirkpatrick Fanfare, which is a decidedly Irish flair to it, as well as variations on a Korean folk song.
I see.
Yeah, it's going to be a plethora of just different types of music.
So this is going to be the Friday before Pride, not a week before Pride, is that correct?
That is correct. It's actually going to occur on Friday, June 19th at 8 p.m.
Friday before.
So, it's a kickoff to Pride week.
Right, it's the weekend before the actual Pride Weekend.
Pride Weekend, Pride Parade, and it's on the 27th.
That's correct. Yes. And it's going to be a wonderful way to get your Pride activities and festivities off to the
get the juices right flowing on the Pride stuff. Now, I'm reading here that it's a benefit.
Yeah, actually.
Who's the beneficiary?
Well, every year we... Or every concert, excuse me, we usually have a beneficiary for our ticket proceeds. And this year, this concert, it's actually going to be the Houston Food Bank.
Great. I know that I've heard on the news and all that they need more food because there's a lot more people needing their assistance. So this is a great deal.
Yeah, and actually we're asking anyone who comes to the concert to actually bring a non-perishable food item. We plan to have a Red Barrel there or some other collection type
container. Now, the concert's free, isn't it?
The concert, actually, the ticket proceeds will go to the Houston Food Bank. Yeah,
so we can't really mention the ticket price, but where can people get tickets?
They can actually go to the hobbycenter.org, or they can go to the houstonprideband.org, which is the band's website, and there's a link there to the Hobby Center page.
So not only do the proceeds go to the Houston Food Bank, you're also gathering food and non-perishable items at the concert.
Correct.
Okay, so very good help for the community.
Now, you said we're doing this your second year at the Hobby Center? But you do concerts all year long, do you not?
Oh, yeah. We usually do about 3 or 4 concerts per year. And actually, this is the second year as well that we've done a free children's concert that occurs around the springtime. And we actually had one. I just wanted to bring this up because it was such a huge success. It was at Discovery Green.
Oh, yeah.
And Discovery Green has actually invited us back to perform, whether it be next year.
Congratulations on that. That's wonderful.
You. Or perhaps a... Christmas concert.
And and what did y'all play? What was your topics for the children? I just wonder.
Peter and the Wolf.
Ah, of course. And gotta have that. Classic.
And Camille Saint-Saëns' Carnival of the Animals, which was, and both of them were narrated by Ernie Manous.
Ernie Manous.
Oh,
friend
yes.
of Queer Voices.
Yes. Yes. A good friend.
Now, was this like in the evening time?
No, this was actually during the day. It was on a Sunday, and we had a great turnout. The music was really good. Ernie did a great job. Want to thank him publicly on the radio right now for providing us such a great service. It was just a great turnout for such a wonderful day.
Very good. Now, heaven forbid people miss this concert. There'll be another chance to hear the Pride Band, I understand?
Oh, yeah. Well, if we're getting kicked off to the festivities for the Pride weekend, you can certainly see the band marching within the Pride Parade that following weekend.
And I expect all of our listeners to participate and go to Pride and enjoy the wonderful festivities that our community puts on.
The festival as well as the parade?
Yes.
It's Saturday, June 27th.
That's right. And it's a day to be gay and out and just celebrate. And
be happy.
Celebrate what we have and what we're fighting for.
Exactly.
So some of the other concerts, and when do you usually have them during the year? And do you have any idea when they're going to be this upcoming?
Sure thing. Actually, we're going to have our season next year is going to include a Pops concert around October.
Good.
And our artistic director, Jason Stevens, came with a wonderful title called Popra.
Popra.
Because it's going to include some opera pieces and some also pop pieces. When I say opera, like, you know, Carmen.
Oh, yeah.
And good Phantom opera. Of the Opera and stuff like that. You know, good pop stuff.
Yes. The gay stuff that we like to hear.
Oh, definitely. And then we, always have the winter concert where we also have our silent auction and ticket raffle. And then, of course, our season-ending concert. And somewhere in there, we're going to throw in the children's concert, I'm sure, again.
So for people that are musically inclined and may want to get involved with the Pride Band, I know you're always looking for members and people that not necessarily are, you know, virtuosos or trended Juilliard and are fantastic, but can, you know.
But if they did, they're okay to come.
Yeah. I'm sure you wouldn't
definitely.
Turn them away.
Oh, no, not at all.
How do people get in contact with you and maybe if they're interested in the band?
Well, they can certainly go to the band website, www.houstonprideband.org, or they can email us at info@HoustonPrideBand.org. Or they can come to one of our rehearsals every Wednesday night at 7:30 at Resurrection Metropolitan Community Church.
And what's the address for people that may not know?
That is located at T.C. Jester and 11th.
11th Street. It's a big church right there on the bayou.
And yes.
Can't miss it.
Very easy to find.
Yeah.
Well, Rudy, thank you for coming on. I just want to make sure that everyone knows about the concert, which is going to be Friday, June 19th at 8 o'clock at Zilka Hall, downtown Hobby Center. The address is 800 Bagby Street.
And you can get tickets where?
At www.thehobbycenter.org.
All right.
Very good.
And thank you very much.
Like you said, it's a great time. Thank you very much.
Strike up the band.
And that was some of the Houston Pride Band. So we're going to now reach way back into the archives and pick up some This Way Out that we didn't get a chance to play last month.
It's far from the Bible Belt, but the biblical battle over same-gender marriage saw one of its finest moments in the state of Maine this week. This Way Out correspondent Amy Brown reports on how religious leaders helped win the day for equality.
On May 6th, Maine became the fifth state to legalize same-gender marriage when the state's governor, John Baldacci, signed into law an act to end discrimination in civil marriage and affirm religious freedom. Although religious beliefs are cited as the reason for most opponents' lack of support for the law, a coalition of Maine's religious leaders have been among the most vocal supporters. Reverend Mark Wirth spoke on their behalf at a public hearing on the bill.
I am speaking today on behalf of the Religious Coalition for the Freedom to Marry in Maine. We share a belief in the legal equality for gay and lesbian couples. We are a group of clergy and leaders from many diverse traditions. We are Baptists, Methodists, and Lutherans, Presbyterians, and Episcopalians, Unitarian Universalists, and Swedenborgians, Jews, Native Americans, Quakers, and clergy of the United Church of Christ, and I apologize to those who I may have left out. We're naming just a few. We lead congregations in Dexter and Rockland, Elfred and Auburn, Hancock and Limestone, Fort Kent and Freiburg, and all of the places in between. What unites us is our unwavering support for equal legal marriage rights for same-sex couples. Some of our members are offering written testimony, and as of today, 166 main religious leaders have signed our declaration in support of marriage equality. A few of them are here today. In my own religious tradition, we believe that love is the most holy and universal of bonds. Love should be judged not by the gender of its partners, but by the mutuality and tenderness of its expression. We recognize that there is passionate debate about biblical interpretation and whether marriage between same-sex partners should be given religious approval. We are here to bear witness that many religious leaders and religious communities honor and bless the love and marriage of same-sex partners. But your job today is not to settle ecclesiastical disputes, but rather to ensure justice and fairness for all Maine citizens without favor or prejudice. Some religious leaders say that marriage would be meaningless if procreation is not possible. I strongly disagree. My wife and I have been married for nearly 30 years and have no children, and yet our marriage gives great meaning to our lives. Why would clergy like myself support marriage equality for lesbians and gays? Because it is good, right, and fair. I believe in marriage. Good marriages benefit the entire community. Legal marriage promotes family stability and cohesiveness. Marriage promotes financial security, long-term commitment, and faithfulness. I believe these are good things. They are good for straight families, and they are good for gay families. And so I make a conservative case for marriage equality. Marriage promotes family values that should be available to all families, not just straight families. These are our family values. In our families, everyone is valued. Because we believe in fairness and equal treatment, all families deserve access to the legal and financial protections and the human dignity contained in civil marriage, and therefore we urge you to pass LD 1020 without amendment or revision. Thank you.
Thank you.
There had been concern that Governor Baldacci might veto the bill, as he has expressed opposition to same-gender marriage in the past. But he has said that public testimony in support of the legislation changed his mind. As he signed the bill into law last week, he said, quote, "I have come to believe that this is a question of fairness and of equal protection under the law." The Maine Family Policy Center, longstanding opponents of GLBT civil rights, have already announced that they will attempt to repeal the law via citizen-initiated referendum. According to their website, quote, "The successful veto will end 3 decades of political wrangling over sexual immorality," end quote. Out-of-state hate groups have also wasted no time jumping on the bandwagon. An alleged minister from North Dakota claiming to be the one true voice of God has written an open letter to Governor Baldacci that says in part, quote, "You have become a creature of darkness. You have succumbed to evil. You and every member of the Maine legislature that have voted for gay marriage are creatures of darkness, and I am done with you. At the moment, evil rules in Maine, but it will not last," end quote. For This Way Out, this is Amy Brown reporting from WERU-FM in East Orland, Maine.
Hi, I'm J.D. Doyle. You'll hear my voice during the monthly audiophile music feature on This Way Out. But I'm here now to ask for your support of this one-of-a-kind radio show. We know times are tough these days. We have one part-time paid staff person at This Way Out who does all the production and administrative work to bring you our half-hour international radio show every week. The rest of us are unpaid volunteers. Everyone here does it for love, certainly not for financial gain. You can't put a monetary value on this program, whether it's in dollars, euros, or yen. We think This Way Out offers a priceless, sometimes even life-saving voice heard around the world, celebrating the rich diversity of LGBT experience. Please log on to our website to see how you could help keep us going. Whatever you can offer will be put to good use and truly appreciated. Read all about it at www.thiswayout.org. That's www.thiswayout.org. And thank you. Sing if you're happy.
Josh Kilmer Purcell used to be a New York City drag queen with a drinking problem, but that was 10 years ago. Today, he's an Out magazine columnist, a best-selling author, and a gentleman farmer who's found his Prince Charming. Our Steve Pride chats with Kilmer Purcell about his first memoir and new novel.
English poet William Blake once said, "The road of excess leads to the palace of wisdom," and there's no better poster boy for that adage than Out magazine columnist Josh Kilmer Purcell, whose real-life adventures in drunken drag were documented in I Am Not Myself These Days, a memoir. And although the truth was stranger than fiction, he's turned to fiction with his new novel, Candy Everybody Wants.
I'm Josh Kilmer Purcell.
So
that's all I got.
What's the new book about?
I call it the memoir I wish I lived. It's a coming-of-age story of a young kid who grew up in Oconomowoc, Wisconsin, similar to myself. And he's 15 years old, and he's obsessed with celebrity. And he escapes into the television every night, and he's determined to become a celebrity. And the book opens with him filming his own pilot episode in his backyard that he's going to send to Hollywood to be discovered. And it's called Dallas D. He's convinced it's going to be the hottest new thing. And then the book just goes on sort of a rollicking tale. He winds up getting shipped to New York and finds out who his real father is, who heads up an escort agency for chorus boys. And he gets into sitcom in Hollywood, and he falls in love with his child star that he used to watch on television. And it all falls apart after it's revealed that he's gay. Because it's the 80s. It takes place in the 80s. The first chapter is pretty much autobiographical.
So you wanted to be a child star.
Oh, yeah. I think that we have so many pop culture references in our culture, and I think some of it stems from being young and feeling so outside. I know a lot of my gay friends, we all used to sort of escape into television. We'd come home. We weren't going to go out and play football with the neighborhood kids. We weren't really invited, so I watched television hours and hours and hours. And I loved watching the celebrities. I remember in the fall, they would have the fall premiere commercials, and they were like 3 minutes long, and they would have all the celebrities from the TV shows on a network, and they'd be singing and dancing together. And I thought, oh my God, there's Larry Hagman dancing with Gary Coleman, and I want to be wherever they are. That's the life I want to live. I tried to create the closest thing to it I could when I finally moved to New York and became a drag queen. Drag is sort of like a fake celebrity, I think. You're a celebrity among a very small segment of nighttime people. But it was what I was looking for. I got to the front of the lines. I got into the clubs. It was a fake celebrity, but that was what I wanted as a child.
Why did you move from memoir to fiction? Did you run out of memories?
No, I ran out of things that happened. I don't pretend to be a great writer. I think there's really great writers and there's really good storytellers, and I like to tell stories. But I didn't want to be one of those memoirists that, you know, eventually have to make going to the laundromat universally important. I wanted to continue writing, of course, but I wanted not to do another memoir until I had something worth memoiring.
But there is an unwritten sequel that nobody expected. I Am Not Myself These Days, a memoir, was about your experiences as a perpetually drunk drag queen with a crack-addicted male prostitute lover. And now, You live in a 200-year-old estate in upstate New York, where you raise goats and heirloom tomatoes with your handsome doctor husband, who ironically works for Martha Stewart, Omnimedia, as vice president of healthy living. A true story.
Yeah.
But it's a sequel I wouldn't believe. It's something.
Yeah, I hadn't thought of that, of how ironic that is. You know, part of, to the point of making sure I have something to write about, that was part of why we bought this farm. I mean, I wanted to return to my rural roots a little bit from Wisconsin, but in my first book, I talk about how shy I am, and I'm a very hesitant and anxious person, and the drag helped me overcome that, doing drag. So I always force myself to do sort of uncomfortable things so that I have a life. Otherwise, I just don't feel like I'm living. So buying this farm upstate, obviously two very urban gay guys, now we have over 100 goats, and we make soap. That was another thing. We wound up making soap from the goat milk, and we gave it to Martha for Christmas, and she loved it, and some other fashion editors, and then they said, oh, you should sell it. And Brent made the soap on the Martha show, and now we're in a huge mess because we're getting all these orders, which is... So now we're frantically making soap every weekend. It was supposed to be sort of our getaway, and now we're consumed with making soap.
And now your partner has been outed. It was a
yeah.
secret for a long time, I guess.
Yeah, I kept it a secret, not for any sort of nefarious reason, but because we both had sort of different public lives, and I just didn't want to confuse people. There was really no good reason. It just seemed easier not to. I called him B whenever I wrote about him. But it wasn't for trying to hide anything. We were both out of the closet at work and with our families. We're just not out of the closet with the rest of the world.
And he is?
He is Dr. Brent Ridge. People know him from the Martha show. He's Dr. Brent. He has a radio show, Ask Dr. Brent, and he writes in Martha's magazines. It was interesting to me when we sort of outed ourselves with the soap website and when we made this soap on Martha. And I was waiting to see what the reaction would be more from people who knew who he was. Obviously, everybody knows I'm gay, but it didn't play a huge part in his sort of public appearance. And he gets a ton of letters from women across the country. I think he's cute, you know, either he's gotten marriage proposals or, you know, want to set him up with their daughters. I thought maybe there would be a little bit of backlash on that, but I don't know if it's a mark of how far we've come or not, but the Martha crowd likes him even more. Now they have a new gay friend.
What is Martha Stewart really like?
I adore Martha, and she's actually coming to our farm to visit later this summer, and I'm absolutely petrified. I just can't imagine having her sleep in our house. I'd be up all night. I'll stand outside her door just in case she needs something. But yeah, that's how you feel. And the ironic thing is she doesn't care. You meet her, and really all Martha cares about is learning new things and sharing what she learns. Whenever people ask what she's really like, I always say she's exactly like you think she is. She's no worse. She's not the Sybil Shepherd monster, and she's also not a secret grandmother. You know, she's Martha Stewart.
What do you want people to take away from your novel?
Well, I sort of wanted to explore the roots of reality television, where this trend came from, this sort of unreal reality. And I do believe that we created a different celebrity culture, beginning with Ronald Reagan. I think real life just became a veneer. It was whatever was the most popular, most flashy. And I don't think we've ever really recovered from it. I just don't think there's a lot of authenticity in the world. And so I just wanted to go back to those roots because I was buying into it. I was one of them. And part of me thinks that that's how we wind up with a presidential race that's American Idol. And nobody seems bothered by it. It's just our new reality is celebrity.
I've been speaking with Out Magazine columnist Josh Kilmer Purcell, the author of I Am Not Myself These Days, a memoir, and the novel Candy Everybody Wants. This is Steve Pride. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. This week, Chris Wilson, Pam Marshall, Rex Walker with Bill Kelly, Amy Brown, J.D. Doyle, and Steve Pride contributed program material. Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out is underwritten in part by a grant from the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation and through donations from our listeners. Thank you. Log on to thiswayout.org to see how you can support our work. hear our podcasts or subscribe to CDs of our programs. To receive our weekly program email alerts, email tworadio@aol.com. You can also write to us at P.O. Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and the entire This Way Out family, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening on KDUR Durango, Colorado, 2BAY Byron Bay, New South Wales, WHYS Eau Claire, Wisconsin, and more than 175 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Stay tuned.
This Way Out is heard every week as part of Queer Voices. You are listening to 90.1 FM KPFT.
Well, not only is it the first day of hurricane season.
Yes.
But it is also Pride Month.
Isn't that wonderful?
Yes. June is the time that we think about what happened 40 years ago. It's the
40th anniversary.
That's before my time. I'm 35, so.
Oh. Well, we'll tell you the story.
Well, I've actually been to the bar in New York. And
what was the name of the bar?
Stonewall.
Stonewall, that's right.
Yes. It doesn't have anything to do with the three-hour boat ride, right?
Three-hour boat ride.
No, okay.
No, I don't know.
That's another story.
Another story.
Well, we hope to be covering a lot of what's going on in Pride this month, but we don't quite know what's all going on with Pride. This year, Outsmart's going to be the official publication of the Pride celebration. I guess the magazine that used to do that is no longer being published, so Outsmart's taken that over, and they have in the past done a wonderful job of publishing all the events that happen, whether they are official or not official.
Well, and two, if you have an event out there that something's going on, hey, send it to Queer Voices. Let us know about it. We'll follow up on it and announce what's going on and when it's going on. And it's part of our service as being the voice of the community.
And well, if you're on Facebook, I was going to say that you could join our Queer Voices group and get the latest weekly update and rundown of the show.
That's right. You can send us information at that time, too.
Exactly.
And next week, we're going to have Brad Odom, the president of Pride Houston, to talk about what's going to be happening this year.
And I wanted to remind people that Wednesday is a special program on Channel 8 called Montrose, the Transformation of a Neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And I got to preview it last week, and it's very interesting. There's a lot of kind of retrospective and kind of archival footage of Montrose back in the day and how it's changed, and a lot of community leaders were on talking about Montrose.
Well, if you know about Montrose but you don't know its history and what it looked like in the past, you know, it's ideal to do that.
It was crazy back in the day.
It was something else. I had my fair share of it, not all the way back in the beginning, but yeah. I had as we go through our lives and transitioned into our new lives, when we come out, we end up in Montrose.
Well, there's only one person that was around in the beginning, and that was Ray Hill, so.
Well, yeah, but he was here when Stone was created.
that's Wednesday night at 8 o'clock on Channel 8.
And when is the Houston Pride Band thing?
That is Friday, June 19th at 8 o'clock also.
Okay. And it's going to be at Hobby Center.
The Zilka Hall of Hobby Center, which is kind of the smaller venue there.
Absolutely. And we want to thank Paul Scott, Executive Director with Equality Texas, for coming on our show today.
And Rudy Martinez from the Houston Pride Band, Marketing Director.
And David Elliott, who called us in from Washington, giving us some views that is happening nationwide.
And this is Queer Voices.
Thank you.
You have been listening to Queer Voices. Heard each Monday at 8 p.m. here on KPFT, a publicly funded Pacifica Network station. Queer Voices is produced live in Houston with recorded segments from This Way Out, which is produced at KPFK in Los Angeles. Queer Voices executive producer is Jack Walensky. On-air voices are Glenn Holt, J.D. Doyle, Deborah Bell, Jennifer Renee, Greg Chapman, and Jack Walensky. Be sure to listen every Saturday night, Sunday morning at 1 a.m. for After Hours with Jimmy Carper. It's Queer Radio with Attitude. This is listener-sponsored and commercial-free Pacifica Radio, KPFT, at 90.1 FM, 89.5 FM Galveston, and worldwide via streaming audio from kpft.org. For Queer Voices, I'm Glenn Holt.
You listen, then you fall in love, you have your favorite programs that you listen to each and every week, and finally you do the right thing by calling in that pledge of support to KPFT. You feel great, but guess what? Your job, it's not done just yet. You still need to fulfill your promise to KPFT by sending that pledge payment today, and when you do, you take that often forgotten last step. Don't wait any longer. KPFT depends on you.
Do you have the subterranean homesick blues? Is everything broken? Did you wake up this morning feeling like a rolling stone? You could see your doctor, but there is little chance he would tell you anything but take two aspirin and go straight to Thanks Bob 6. The doctor knows the cure for sure. Saturday, June 6th at Dan Electro's Guitar Bar. 1031 East 24th Street in the Heights. There we'll see many of Houston's local favorites come together to celebrate the music of Bob Dylan the best way possible. And that's by playing it. Thanks Bob 6 features Fall on Folk, Third Ear, The Psychedelos, Craig Kinsey, Los Vertigos, Luke and the Drifters, and making a special appearance, the Austin Lounge Lizards. Doors open at 5, festivities at 6. The event is brought to you by Pat and Rosie's Night Sounds and Dead Air, your Friday night faves. Food and drink are available, as well as a wide open dance floor. Thanks Bob 6 is a KPFT benefit. The entire door donation goes straight to your community radio station. So if you're feeling like there are dogs running free along the Watchtower on Highway 61, put on your leopard skin pillbox hat and join us Saturday, June 6th for Thanks Bob 6, a Dead Air production. So what could go wrong? KPFT Houston.
First you listen, then you fall in love, you have your favorite programs that you listen to each and every week, and finally you do the right thing by calling in that pledge of support to KPFT.
The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.